Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
The first shiur on the topic of Bailus, ownership, and Kinyonim. It's a very broad, extensive topic. And first, let's try to familiarize ourselves with some of the terms that we find all over Shas. Shibud, Shibude de Reb Nosson, Umen Koine, Mishvach Kli, Dovor Hagoyrim Lemomen Kemomoin Domi, Oy Enoi Kemomen, Toivas Hano Momen, Or Enoi Momen, Kinyone, Geneve Ugzele, Dovor She Enoi Sheloi, Dovor, She'einoi shusoi shutfis shevet akoyhanim, the status of an object after the owner, after the bailum, is mafgir or is miyayish, and mafgir and miyayish are two very different concepts. Let's start with this idea that it's possible for an object to be owned by somebody, sheloi, it's his, yet it's einoi birshuso, it's not under his domain, under his control. And that could happen in one of two ways, either that a ganav makes a kinyan geneva, and the fact that the ganav has a kinyan on it, although the ganav might still be in his house, but the ganav made a kinyan geneva on it, the status of the ganav's kinyan geneva renders the chefetz, the status of einoi birshusoi, not being in the control of the owner. The ganav has a chiv of hashover, and literally meaning returning, but in lamdas it means returning to the control, to the rishus of the owner. And therefore, as long as the object has not been returned, the owner has no power to be makne, to transfer ownership of this object, this stolen object. He has no power to be magnish it. He doesn't even have the power to be mafgir it, because it is not birshusoi, although it is shaloi, it's his object, and if he dies, obviously his yershim, his inheritors, will yarshin it, but nevertheless, it's not under his control, it's not birshusoi. Likewise, the status of a fallen object that fell out of his pocket in Aveda, it's lost. The fact that it's in the status of being lost from him also renders the object the status of einoi birshusoi, and therefore the owner, although it's sheloi, cannot be mafkir, magdish, or makne to others and transfer to others ownership, because it's not under his control. It's a status of aveda, and again, there's a hashovas aveda, returning it to the rishus, to the control of the owner. Which now brings us to a very interesting halacha called dovor hagoyrim lemomen kemomen domi, meaning it could be an object that's worthless, has no value at all to anybody in the world besides to one person. And an example would be
if
somebody stole a truckload of chametz right before Pesach, worth $100,000. And when Erev Pesach comes, the owner can't sell the chametz to a guy because it's einoi birshusoi. The ganav made a kinyan on it, and he has no, the bailam has no control. It's shaloi, but it's einoi birshusoi. The ganav, on the other hand, also has no power to sell it because it's not shaloi. It's birshusoi, but it's not shaloi. Pesach passes, and this chametz was chametz she'ovar olav ha-pesach, which becomes isurei hano, which is another term that we need to know when we're considering bailus. Isurei hano has no value. And this isurei hano is worthless, yet is a very interesting gezeira sakosu. The Torah says, "Veheishiv esagzeila asher gozal." The two extra words asher gozal, we learn a few fascinating halachas. One of them is asher gozal. If it looks like the way it looked at the time of the geneva, but if you made a shinui, you made a substantial change in the object. You took a chunk of wool and you made it into a sweater. You wove it into thread. You spun it into threads and wove it into a cloth. So that's a shinui. That makes that the ganav now becomes the complete owner because he made a shinui, he made a change. And shinui is kaine for the ganav, and there's no chiyuv hashava on the object. Rather, the hashava now turns into a monetary hashava, and he has to return the value of the object. So, that's one thing we learn from Asher Gozal. Another thing we learn from Asher Gozal, which is fascinating, is that the ganav, if the object in its outward appearance still looks exactly the way it did look at the time of the Geneva, although at that point it was worth $100,000 and now it's worth zero. Nevertheless, its outward appearance is what counts, and he could return it, the Ganav could return it, and be Mekayim his Chiyuv of Hashova, and he owes the owner nothing, although he gave him something that has zero value. So now comes the question, what if somebody sees that the ganav is about to return $100,000 worth of worthless chametz, and he gets very upset at him and says, that's terrible what you did. You stole $100,000 and you're returning something that's worth zero and you think you're going to get away with that? He takes a torch and burns the whole truckload worth of chametz. And now the question is he a mazik? Did he damage something? He damaged something worthless. Or do we say that since to this ganav, it's goyim lamamin, it's going to now cause him to go to his bank and take out and withdraw $100,000. So to this ganav, it's worth $100,000, although to the entire world, it's worthless. But it's davar ha-goyim lamamin, so there's a machlokes Reb Shimon and Chachamim, if kimamin dami or not, and depending on that, Reb Shimon holds its kimamin, and depending on that, the person that torched the chametz would have to pay him the $100,000, because although it has no value to anybody else, but he has a monetary value in this chunk of chametz, in this truckload of chametz. Then there's the question of toivas hano momen. We know that when a person is mafrish truma umaise, so the truma, the second he's kater shem truma, let's say he's a very wealthy farmer and he has a lot of truma. The second he's kater shame, he calls a truma, it doesn't belong to him anymore. To who does it belong to? A very interesting concept. It belongs to the shevet ha-kohanim. It belongs to all the kohanim. But does it really belong? Are all the kohanim shutfim? No, they're not partners. Shutfis is a different concept than shevet ha-kohanim. Shevet ha-kohanim is a very interesting lundish concept, but it doesn't belong. They don't have to buy each other out on every piece of truma. And the owner has a schus. He has the power to decide to which kohen he wants to give it to. He could give it to his favorite kohen. And therefore, if he has $100,000 worth of truma, and somebody that has a grandfather, a kohen, comes over to him and says, I'll pay you $1,000, give the $100,000 worth of chametz to my grandfather. That money is tivas hano, the schus that I have the hano to decide who to give it to. And the question is that considered mammon? Is that considered that since I could receive $1,000 for somebody to pay me off to give it to his favorite kohen, does that make that I have an actual ownership hidden in these $100,000 worth of truma? And therefore, if somebody comes and burns the truma, he burnt $100,000 worth of truma, but he burnt $1,000 of my ownership, because I have $1,000 value in this, or we say, no, it's not a moment. You happen to have a schus to decide who to give it to. What exactly that is, we don't know. But it's not a moment. It's not a, you can't say that you actually have value in these pairs. And maybe it it's not proper for a kohen to come and steal the 100,000 dollars worth of truma. But if he does, he's not really stealing because it doesn't belong to you. You only have some power over it. Maybe like some power of attorney over it, but you don't really have ownership. That would be the shayla of tivus hanoas moment or any moment. So far we discussed dovar agoidim le moment kimoment, tivus hano moment or not. Now there's umin koine b'shvach keli. That would be, let's say, you give a chunk of gold worth $1,000 to a jeweler, a craftsman that knows how to craft it into a beautiful piece of jewelry. And now that beautiful piece of jewelry is worth $5,000. Do you simply say that the person that gave the jewelry, that gave the piece of gold to this craftsman to make it into a piece of jewelry for him, is it simply like he hired him for a job, like a for finishing a certain job, and when the job is completed, he owes him the money for the job, but the second the piece of jewelry went from a chunk of gold to it's worth $1,000, and now it became a piece of jewelry worth $5,000. That $5,000 is already owned by the person that owns the chunk of gold. His chunk of gold has now been formed into a beautiful form and is now worth $5,000, but it's his. He actually owned the chunk of gold, and now that chunk of gold has a new value to it of $5,000. He simply owes the craftsman $4,000 for his craftsmanship, and that's something that he owes. That would be the case if we would not say umin kaine b'shvach kli, that the craftsman actually owns the higher value that he produced and put into through his craftsmanship into the gold. He has an ownership of that $4,000 is owned by him. And the difference would be if there would be an explosion and the jewelry shop exploded and there's nothing there anymore, does the person that asked him to make it into jewelry owe him the $4,000? Or no, he owes him nothing because he had, the craftsman had $4,000 worth of ownership, because besides the actual physical gold, there's the craftsmanship intertwined into the metal itself, and we say he owns the quality of what he made this a higher value is the ownership in the actual thing, although the actual weight of the gold belonged to somebody else. That would be umikayin b'shvachli. And there's a fascinating hagoyes oshri in the second perek of Bav Metzi and Elu Metzius. In those days, when there was a hole in the roof, they would buy a cheap metal called bedil, a bar of bedil, and they would melt it down to cover the hole in the roof. So Yisrael buys from Akum, and he buys a bar of this bedil for $20. Then Yisrael decides he doesn't need it, and he sells it to a second Yisrael. The second Yisrael starts melting it down, and he realizes that it's really a bar of gold covered by a thin sheet of bedil. And instead of being worth $20, it's worth $20,000. And the question is, there's a concept of mekach tos. You sold something way higher or lower than its value. It's a mekach tos. It's a mistake. But Rabbeinu Eliezer mimitz, with the agreement of Rabbeinu Tam, say that although the entire weight of this piece of metal has definitely been owned by the first Yisrael, and had he been Mekadesh Eisha with these, let's say, 10 pounds of bedil, what he thought was bedil, she would be Mekudeshes. He owned this. This was his. The whole entire 10 pounds worth of it. But now, since he didn't know that it was gold, in his understanding, he was the owner on bedil, then we look at it that that's what he owned. And he didn't own the gold, because what you don't know, the treasure that you don't know exists, is not yours. And therefore, it only came to be gold by the person that grasped the reality of it being gold. And therefore, there's no mekach tois. It's a very fascinating halacha. And then, let's discuss just one point of shutfis. We need to understand what is a partnership? Because the Mechas Chinuch has a very big question and he doesn't understand. Although writing a Sefer Torah is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and it's a very expensive mitzvah, so most people, let's say it's Yosef Mechaymish, it's more than a fifth of their Nechosim, and they can't afford to write a Sefer Torah, but why don't all Bar Mitzvah Bacharim, the second they become Bar Mitzvah, and they have a chiv to write a Sefer Torah, let all the Bar Mitzvah Bacharim of that year chip in a dollar and hire a Sefer to write a Sefer Torah for all of them, and now they have a Sefer Torah completed with shutfis of all of them. So the question would be, how do we look at shutfis? How do we look at a partnership? Do we look at shutfis that they all own the entirety of the Sefer Torah, and therefore they're Mekayim Mitzvahs Ksiva Sefer Torah, which would leave us with a Pella? Why don't we always do that? Why doesn't every Bar Mitzvah Bachur trip in and hire a Sefer? Or, no, they only, if it's 50,000 boys tripping in, they each would only own a 50,000th of a Sefer Torah, and therefore they would not be Yitzeh, the mitzvah of Ksivas Sefer Torah. And we'll end the first year with this. It needs to be reviewed many times. It's very extensive. It's a lot of different topics in Kinyonim. And this will be the end of the first year.
A whole world of content awaits you on Kol HaLashon, United Kingdom, 0208-191-7000, United States, 646-663-7920, Israel, 03-617-1095.